This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to On Target, and thank you so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we are here every week to talk about subjects that we think are important and interesting and educational for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. I'm sure that you are going to be familiar with my guests today, or at least the institution that they represent, because here in Western New York, I think Roswell is a unique institution that has made such a difference for us, our reputation, nationally as well as probably internationally, because I think I read or Dr. Johnson told me once that people come from all over the world for treatment at Roswell because there are so many innovative activities taking place and so much research going on. And I thought it was so important for all of us to know that right here in Western New York, we have a place like Roswell that we can turn to for the most innovative, new, and sometimes experimental treatment for every kind of cancer that there is, and also all of the people that work there and that are involved with Roswell are instrumental in for the quality of life that we have here in Western New York, for improving our quality of life because they live and work among us. So I thought this is a very good subject, not only at this time of year, but every time of year. So in the studio with me today is, I'm going to try to get everybody's name right, but luckily for me, Amy, our public relations person, wrote everyone's name phonetically. Thank you, Amy, very much. And thank you, dear Brian Whitman, who is my very good friend, for all the wonderful work that he has done for Roswell and for suggesting that we talk about this on Target today. In the studio with us is Terry Bourgeois. I can say that because it's French, and I somewhat speak French. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
But I don't know if your name is really, but she wrote it out phonetically, but I laughed because I do know the word bourgeois. And also in the studio with us, Terry is the founder of the ride that we're going to be talking about for Roswell in a moment. And also with us is a faculty member, Dr. Michael Cieszelski, and he is assistant professor of neurosurgery at Roswell. And we thank you so much for coming and joining us today, Doctor.
Thank you. Okay.
So now I want to ask you, first of all, how long have you been at Roswell and what is your background before you came?
Sure. So I've been at Roswell Park for about 20 years now. My background is in molecular immunology. I have a PhD where we've learned how to develop immunotherapy, which is what we're focusing on right now, trying to treat brain tumor patients at Roswell Park. I'm actually from the area, came from Nyrie University, University of Buffalo, and landed at Roswell Park, where we've been working for about the last 12 years on this particular immunotherapy that we're moving along through clinical trials.
Now, the issue of immunotherapy is something pretty new in as far as treatment goes, but it's not obviously just at Roswell, and it's not just for brain cancer, right?
Right. So immunotherapy is something that has really taken the cancer world by storm just in the last couple of years. It's always been around in the background. We've worked on it, you know, trying to move it to the forefront, but it's something that's really starting to show activity on brain cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer, across the board. But it's really taking your own immune system, harnessing it and redirecting it, retraining it, and teaching it to go after the cancer growing in your body. And in many cases, you can do this with much less toxicity than you've seen with chemotherapy and some of the other classic cancer treatments that come to mind.
How does it, it's funny when you said less toxicity, how does it actually work?
So in ours in particular, we're working on, it's a vaccine called Cervax-M. It's a protein that is injected in your shoulder or your thigh just subcutaneously, kind of like you would get the flu shot. It's a very simple procedure, and that triggers antibody production and white blood cells in your body to learn how to target a tumor. And they will go throughout your body and hunt down tumor cells and destroy them, much like they would an infection.
but it's not as in explain why it's better or why, aside from if it may work, which we certainly hope it does, but why is it a better treatment, for example, as you pointed out, than radiation or than chemotherapy, which are the standard procedures.
Right. So many forms of immunotherapy are much longer lasting than chemotherapy or radiation. So, I mean, radiation has a direct effect on the tumor, kills it as it's being irradiated. Chemotherapy, as the drug is in your system. Immunotherapy, because you're being immunized, can potentially give you lifelong protection against that tumor from ever arising again. You know, in many cases, you are actively preventing that tumor from growing again. And this is something that stays with you very long term.
And how does this relate to the other procedure, which would be an operation of removal of the tumor?
Well, in most cases, they still do that. In ours, we're looking at glioblastoma. It's a brain tumor. So there is still surgery to remove that tumor simply because it's in the brain, causing immediate pressure and damage to the surrounding tissue. So that has to get out. And then once that does, then it initiates rounds of additional treatment. So they will get some radiation, some chemotherapy, and then hopefully move on to the vaccine. And after they, at that point, they're only coming in every couple of weeks to receive a shot in the arm, and they go home. So it also changes some of the quality of life that these patients are seeing. They don't have to come in for these awful chemotherapy infusions. You know, they get a shot in the arm, they go home, you know, live their life as they would like to.
And when you say that would be so amazing and so wonderful, when you say that this has been a product of research going on at Roswell for some time, who is involved in the research? What kind of people?
So it's a combination of clinical and scientific staff. So I can give the story of ours in particular. So this was something that we developed in the lab. You know, the scientists, white coats, working around, you know, tissue culture dishes and things in the lab, you know, just on the counter. And as we started to develop that further, we became involved more with the clinicians who were working with patients. And we start taking that and seeing if there would be a way to translate it to the clinic. So we start to increase the scale of production of that vaccine. So, you know, a small amount you would use on a culture dish certainly isn't enough to treat a patient that size. So we're looking at ways to move it to the clinic that way, looking at what potential toxicity it may have. From there, we roll it into clinical studies. So there's initially some smaller clinical studies called a phase one clinical study, which looks for toxicity. You want to see that it's safe in a patient and you can give the vaccine to a patient. In our case, we've already completed that phase and found that there was no toxicity. It was a very safe product to give to patients. Now we've moved into a phase two clinical study, which is what donations going into Roswell Park help support. That's things like the Empire State Ride have given to us to enable us to go in and see if this drug actually has any effect in patients. And at this point, I'm happy to say we're coming to the end of our phase two study, and we have started to see results from the study. We're seeing that brain tumor patients that would normally, having just had standard care, the best that's available to them, we would see about 65% of them would still be alive after 1 year. Those that have been on the vaccine, we're seeing up to 94% of those patients are still alive at 1 year and beyond. So for us, it's been this tremendous undertaking, and now we're starting to actually see results, which is really quite exciting.
I know a friend of mine was suffering from not brain cancer, but and she was at Sloan Kettering, and they were saying it was ovarian cancer. But first of all, they used immunotherapy, but at some point in a treatment, they said, she's going to be eligible for a quote-unquote clinical trial. So I wonder what determines if you are or are not eligible for a clinical trial.
Yeah, so when you're looking towards clinical trials, and one of the first things that I would say here, coming from Roswell, working at Roswell, is that you should always be looking for clinical trials. You know, these aren't things that you want to get involved with as, you know, a late step. They're not
you as a patient. You mean
as a patient or anybody coming in there. So many times you think clinical trial and you think that that's my last chance for anything.
That's what I thought when they said it. That's why I'm asking.
Right. And you should really be looking at that as your first chance to get access to many of the experimental therapies that are out there that are being developed. Many of them have very specific criteria. So they're looking for, you know, particular patients that are a certain stage of cancer, or a certain type of cancer. Sometimes they are looking for molecular signatures, which means they're looking for particular genes that are turned on or off that they're trying to test in that particular trial. So there is a pretty large category of criteria that sometimes need to be established to get into one of the trials, but it's something that should be one of the forefront aspects of your cancer treatment.
Because when you say it, I think people might think in their mind, oh, this is a last resort. It's experimental. It's this kind of thing. But you're saying just the opposite. Really, it's encouraging to hear that patients should look for that.
Right. It carries that caveat. You know, you're automatically thinking this is it.
A last resort.
Right. Right. In fact, our vaccine, the way we've set this up, is actually delivered up front. So we're treating patients that have just been diagnosed with a brain tumor. So it's kind of getting away from the mentality of that last step of trying to find something. But we're trying to incorporate this into standard of care for these patients.
Now, so many, not just brain cancer, but so many cancers in the last, 10 years or less, there have been so many new targeted what's the word I'm thinking of? Not cures, but so many new therapies that are available. And the I'm sure you are aware of this. And so the life extension has been so much better for many of these cancers because of this kind of research.
Right. We're seeing tremendous strides across the board in a number of cancers. Lung cancer is one in particular. Breast cancer is one in particular. Recently this year, the NCI, National Cancer Institute, released a study that showed that overall, most cancers across the board are down about 2%, that we're having an effect, that the survival rates are up in many of the cancers. So that's something that we're looking at as we're finally starting to have a little bit of an effect here. We're sort of maybe get over the top of the mountain. So, and immunotherapy has played a huge, huge part of that. So it's going to be a pretty exciting couple of years coming up.
Now, you said you're from here, which is unusual, in that you stayed and you continue your career here. They say very often that there are certain kinds of cancers that are more prevalent in Western New York than other places. Is that true?
Some of them are. Leukemia is one that's fairly high around here. In terms of brain cancer, where my specialty is, it's not really there doesn't seem to be any sort of geographic pattern to that. So. Some yes, some no.
And I want to talk a little bit again about the name of this, CIRVAX-M. That's the vaccine.
Right.
And this is what that not only is it clinical trials here, but I know I noticed that there was other clinic centers that are as well known also that are working with you or using this kind of trial.
Right.
Participating?
Right. So the phase 2 study that we did on CIRVAX-M, and what the name actually stands for, is we're targeting a protein on cancer cells that's oddly named enough, survivin. So that's where the CIR part of that came from, vaccine for VAX, and the M is a modification that we've done to it to make it more stimulating to the immune system. But the phase 2 study that we've done was what's called a multi-center trial. So Roswell Park served as the central trial site, but then we also had the Cleveland Clinic, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Mass General, all participating in it, which drew many patients from around the country as well as around the world. We had a number of patients come from overseas just hearing about it and coming to Roswell to join into the trial.
So I said that at the top of the program, that we are internationally known, but I kind of made it up. So now I'm glad you're verifying
it. It's absolutely true.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And today we are talking to Dr. Michael Cieszelski, and we are going to be talking to Terry Bourgeois. And they are both with Roswell Park Organization. And Dr. Cieszelski is talking about the really important clinical trials that are taking place. And you mentioned that you were fortunate enough that you could pursue these because of fundraising that takes place and that helps you. Why do we need funds? What do funds have to do with, you know, the research?
It's difficult to get a lot of this research completed. One of the strange things in the way that research is funded is that at the basic level and doing many molecular studies, there's a lot of grants that come from the National Cancer Institute and other federal sources to support these initial discoveries. But as they start to develop, those funds don't apply towards a number of clinical trials, which is really the strange thing. You don't see a big push to get things out of the lab and translated into clinical trials. And that's where things like donations from the RIDE, the Empire State RIDE, and donations to Roswell Park make an incredible difference. I can say what we've done so far, there's been about 75 patients treated with this vaccine. And without the support from those donations coming in, this would never have gotten off the ground because there were no funds to move it from the lab to the clinic. And that's what a lot of these donations going into Roswell are funding. They're critical. There's no way things move to actually become real treatments. You know, and here's something that was discovered in Buffalo, being developed in Buffalo, supported by people in Buffalo. So, I mean, we're eternally grateful for every dollar that comes in to help us out and move this thing forward. And hopefully we see this in the clinic for patients all over.
Terry, how did you get interested in the Roswell Alliance?
I actually have quite a decent history with the Alliance. I started getting involved about 19 years ago, shortly after I moved to Buffalo. I guess about 20 years ago. And my first experience with Roswell was I went to a fundraising event. It was actually the RIDE for Roswell. And again, I just moved here, and I was standing in the start line, and I realized the statistic was shared that 1 in 3 women and 1 in 2 men will be impacted by cancer at some point in their lives. And that was overwhelming to me. And I quickly did some math. I had just left the military, actually. I just got out of the military. And so I was out of the military about a year. I was here at the start line for this event. I heard this statistic, and I thought, there's more people that die from cancer almost every single year than all of the wars we've ever fought. And that kind of just struck me, and I thought, you know, this is a cause that I think is important and I wanted to get involved in. So that was about 20 years ago.
And so then you, at this point, you were going to participate in the RIDE for Roswell, which is probably the biggest fundraising athletic event in the area anyway.
Yes. So, and I became very involved in that, the RIDE for Roswell. And about 4 years ago, we realized that there is a significant gap in the amount of research that we could do and the clinical trials that needed to be funded. Versus the amount of work that needed to be done versus the amount of money we had to do them. So we wanted to create another multi-million dollar event by creating the Empire State RIDE. And the goal of the Empire State RIDE was to become a national event that would attract people from all over the nation. And in fact, we've attracted some people from other countries as well. And it's a 7-day event that goes from New York City. We start on Staten Island, and we go to Niagara Falls over 7 days, 540 miles. And so far, we've been doing it. We're actually in kind of officially year 4. We've had people from 20 different states participating. We've received donations from all 50 states, plus multiple countries. And collectively, over those 4 years, we're just over around $1.4 million. But it really feels like a movement. And it's lighting up the state and, in fact, the nation with people coming to do the Empire State Ride.
So how does it physically take place? I mean, how does people sign up? And then you mentioned how far they ride, 7 days. How is it set up? I mean, they have to ride a certain amount. Riding is on a bike, right?
That's correct.
Do we know everyone knows that?
Yes, it's a bicycle, yes.
Okay. A lot of rides, they say people could walk and stuff, but I don't think they could ride. They could walk.
It'd be a long walk. It'd take a while. The first thing in terms of getting involved is we have a website, empirestateride.com, and that's how people get involved. And we have all kinds of information on the website. We have blogs about how to train for it. We have videos and testimonials about what the experience has been like for other people that have done it. But the experience itself is really quite amazing. We start off on Staten Island, and we all get together there. We have our indoctrination, and then we ride it on the ferry past the Statue of Liberty, which is, you know, the two bookends for the Empire State Ride, with the Statue of Liberty being on one end
and Niagara Falls
being on the other. And to me, when we first started it, that was so... to me, inspirational. You know, the Statue of Liberty has been a symbol of hope for people from all around the world. And here, starting off with that icon and going to our nation's first comprehensive cancer center, to me, it was just the perfect bookends for something that impacts all of us. But anyhow, we start off on Staten Island. We head up along the Hudson River to Albany. And then we hang a left and we go through the Mohawk Valley. And actually, a lot of rides go along the Erie Canal. We go on the ridge line of the Mohawk Valley. So when you're going from Albany over to Utica to Syracuse, you're up on this ridge line and you get to see the valley like you can't see when you're down there along the canal. It's absolutely beautiful. It's fully supported. The food is absolutely amazing. So we feed people breakfast, lunch, dinner, rest stops. We have mechanic trucks.
Do you stop at landmark restaurants along the way, or do the restaurants come to you? Or
actually, we for the most part, we have a caterer that follows us the whole way. So the food is very well planned for the endurance event that this is. We do enjoy stopping at local establishments along the way, though. There's a lot of people that along the route, there'll be places that have now become kind of well-known with riders.
Establishment covers a lot. I said food, but I left out beverage.
Well, actually, really, for the during the day, it's usually food establishments that we're stopping at.
Well, I don't think there could be too many beverages and still ride 1,000 million miles.
Yes, about 80 miles a day. So it is an endurance event. But, you know, we really have people with all kinds of capabilities that do the ride.
Do you have to be, I think, like an avid full-time cyclist or somebody? You mentioned training, so I don't think anybody that's listening that knows can ride their bike on a trail here or ride around the block or something. I'm going to say block up here. You can see I'm from New York, but ride around the area. You couldn't necessarily do it, could they?
Well, you do need to train. There's no question about it. The most important thing about getting ready for this ride is you need to have a lot of seat time to get your butt in condition to be able to stay in the saddle, you know, on the bike seat for 7 days and 80 miles a day. We do have a lot of people, though, that they might just be getting into biking, but they have something that's driving them, and they really want to do something about it. Interestingly, one of our riders is a research assistant with Dr. Sucheski, and it was her first year of riding. She's a cancer survivor, and this was 3 years ago. Her name is Danielle, and she does amazing work for Roswell, and she's been an amazing ambassador for the Empire State Ride, and that was her first year of biking.
Well, that's exciting. That's interesting. Do you know other people? Are other people from the doctor's community or the Roswell community at least participate?
Yeah, there's certainly a number of them. And the one in particular that Terry mentioned is actually our coordinator who goes out to all the other centers that we have in the trial. So she'll go out to Boston, Cleveland regularly and check on how things are running out there and maintains the trial for us. And then somehow in the meantime has time to go on to the ride and train all year long. So it's an impressive thing.
I hope she flies to this and doesn't ride to the other places where it takes would take quite a while. What about numbers of what are the numbers that, you know, have participated in the past, and that how did it start and how did it build
sure.
up?
Yeah, so I did it the first year by myself to prove the concept.
Alone?
Yes. I didn't want
Terry,
to invite
you are so dedicated.
I didn't want to invite anybody else until I was sure it was okay. So
we'll see if you could make it. Yeah,
that's right. So we went from 1 to 10 to 60 to just under 100, and last year we were over about 114 for all 7 days, and I think we peaked at about 130 for, because you can do custom rides as well.
What
you don't
does that
have
mean?
To do all. You can do 1, 2, 3, 4 days, so you don't have to do
all
7. Oh, I see.
It's good you said that.
Yeah,
it's good we brought that up.
Yes, yes. Thank you. That is important. And, you know, ultimately, we would like to, as it grows, we'll have those core riders that do all 7 days. But if someone wants to jump on from New York City to Poughkeepsie to Albany and, you know, even form relays across the state and really tie it together, because we're going through near every major city in the state. And it also happens to be, you know, greater than 80% of the population of the entire state along that corridor between the Hudson River and the Erie Canal. So there's a lot of opportunity here.
Oh, now, is this competitive? Are there prizes for who gets there first or anything like that?
No, it's definitely a race. And the prize when you get there is really just making it and the emotional finish line that we have at Niagara Falls is unbelievable. After, you know, you spend 7 days getting pushed to physical and emotional limits and coming in all in the same uniform, we all get together and have a place where we gather, and then we wait till everyone's there, and then we ride two by two in uniform with police escort through Niagara Falls. And again, after 7 days of getting pushed to your limits, having all those people cheering you in, at the end of the story with that bookend of Niagara Falls, it's indescribable.
It reminds me of like the New York Marathon, when you see everybody cheering the people on, you know, the same idea.
Sure,
and
absolutely.
And plus, this is for such a good cause that there has to be that sense of accomplishment with the people when they do make it. And they do succeed.
Absolutely. And one of the cool things that's starting to happen is we've been doing this now for enough years that the towns that we ride through are starting to recognize it's the ride again. And so we're starting to get businesses along the way that are waiting for us. You know, they know it's that week. And when you see the people all with these similar, you know, uniforms riding across the state, the whole state, I think, is starting to pick up with the significance of this event, and almost everyone we talk to along the way has heard of Roswell, and many of them are willing to jump on and support us.
You know what we forgot to say? When does this take place? Or I forgot.
That's a great
to ask
yeah,
you.
So it's July 28th through August 3rd, 2019.
So people have time now to start getting ready.
Absolutely, okay. Yes.
Yes, start training.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking about Roswell, many aspects of Roswell, the Roswell Alliance, and all the good that Roswell does for us here in the community. And we thank you very much for joining us. Please listen again next week to On Target. Have a good week, and goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.